Okay, it is not too often that I cross-post an episode of The Literacy Advocate with an episode of The Purpose-Driven Entrepreneur. I think the last time I did this was when I was talking about Lucas the Dinosaur Entrepreneur. So this is really exciting. I have with me my guest, Eric Pilon-Bignall. He is the Director of Sales at Strive Consulting and the author of the book, Surfing Rogue Waves, How to Paddle Out into the 21st Century. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you, Eric. When we talked before hitting record, you made this statement that I thought that's going to be a perfect episode of the podcast. You said, despite all the exponential change, we're still batch processing kids. Our educational system was formed 100 years ago, and it's relatively unchanged. So first of all, Eric, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question. I think I'm going to try not to give you too long-winded, I guess, of an answer. But the reality is, you know...
Well, what do you mean when you say we're batch processing kids?
Yeah, very much a one-size-fits-all model, right? So, you know, presently America, we've got, you know, I think America's short 1.6 million teachers. It's worse than that worldwide, obviously. We've got, you know, 70 million teachers. I think we're going to need by 2030. We've got 3 million kids, you know, without access to basic education. And, you know, given all this amazing advancement, transformational change we've had, the education system we know today was created for a time before the first industrial revolution, right? It just feels like it's ripe for change. And I think given everything our global society has gone through, educational system has fundamentally gone unchanged. It is a one size fits all model for, you know, which was fine when education was scarce, right? And, you know, and the need was slim, but today knowledge is not just power. It's a necessity, right? To control quality education at scale, we have been forced to standardize everything, including testing, right? Furthermore, we obsessively test for increasingly useless information, you know? Yes. When was the last time you spelled Mississippi without autocorrect or did long division by hand on paper, right?
Eric, when I was touring, I used to say this after I would read a kid's book, I'd do Q&A with the kids. And every once in a while, a kid would say, like, you know, I want to be a writer when I grow up too, but I'm terrible at spelling. And I would just say, hey, good news. You'll never have to worry about being good at spelling ever. And the teachers would get so mad at me for saying that. But I was like, this is just a true statement. It's the same thing that I dealt with in the 90s when everybody would say, you're not going to walk around with a calculator with you wherever you go. And it's like, yes, I do. And I carry a backup battery bank in case that calculator dies. It's called my phone.
Right. And I think you nailed it. And there's a lot that even goes into that, right? Any way you slice it, batch processing kids is an educational tragedy, right? Every brain is wired differently, and standardizing a universal method of learning, it just makes zero sense. There's a study from the U.S., Department of Education that found, you know, 1.2 million kids drop out of school every year. That's 26 kid. That's a kid every 26 seconds. I think it's the math, could be wrong, but yeah. And the number one reason for dropping out is boredom. And I mean, we've seen these patterns develop across business, across our societies, you know, and, you know, are we not noticing this change, right? We've got this convergence of an amplification of these exponential technologies that are so ideally suited to, you know, when there's a need of abundance and customization, and where there's distribution, there's a need for opportunity. When there's need for opportunity, there's money. And where there's money, there's innovation. And innovation is never boring, and it's here and it's coming. And that's kind of what, you know, some of the things that kind of excite me about it.
Yeah. When you think about our education system and the changes that need to happen, so you mentioned two different things. One is we're not actually using education to prepare kids for the world that they live in now, much less the one that they're walking into. And then the other problem is kids are incredibly bored in school. What do you think are specific things that would need to change about our education system to handle both of those problems?
Yeah, you know, I think this is obviously a you know, not an easy problem and a big problem, and change is never easy. And I think there are some answers. I think some stuff's going on right now. There are, you know, I think we've got stuff going on right now, and that's really comes down to, you know, us, our generation, to make sure we're arming the future generations. And I think the future generations are going to come up, you know, with things that are seemingly impossible to us now, and they're going to have simple solutions. And we've got, you know, Peter Diamandis is a great kind of, you know, idol of mine, but a futurist. You know, he has an organization called XPRIZE. It's a non-for-profit organization to design, you know, and host kind of public competitions and encourage technological development to benefit humanity. And a great example in what you're asking me is they put one together to address, you know, the one question that you asked me about is, you know, how do we get more education in the hands of less educated people? And the winner's kind of solution for this competition was great. It was they created a software for just an hour a day. A remote student received the education equivalent of a full-time student. And it's incredible. And distributing it could be just as simple, right? Just take an iPhone we discard when we upgrade.
How much do you know about this? Like, who was determining that it was equivalent? How did they figure that out?
Yeah. And again, you know, the book unpacks a lot more of this research and references all of it, but they actually just did some standardized testing on, like, you know, I guess what we would test as the essentials. And they had, you know, underprivileged kids who went through these systems and normal kids. So it's not just for underprivileged communities. And they found that kind of what was retained when you have really engaging, you know, learning, when you want to learn versus when you're in a classroom for 8 hours and you don't want to learn. And, you know, I think what was really neat is the numbers came out about the same for 1 hour, you know, to 8 hours. And again, this is just one example, right? You know, we're producing, I think, a billion Android devices a year. So if we could educate lots of minds. There are a lot of underprivileged people, you know, who don't have access to education. And that's like a fundamental thing you need moving forward in life, right? So I think we addressed that. And I think to your point, you know, how does it happen? This goes back to the technology, right? So, you know, like everything else, I'm going to add a buzzword in here, but add artificial intelligence, right? So what they did is, you know, they supplement artificial intelligence with this education, and it creates kind of a really unique individual learning environment, you know, where everything's customized to your brain and your body, right? Sensors monitor and inform the AI of when to adapt based on the student's neurophysiological data. So at this point, our AI understands better than we do how to engage and give us knowledge and evolve and grow. And, you know, what's great about that is it's not just for underprivileged communities and remote areas, right? This convergence, you know, of all these technologies amplified by AI, it's going to resolve a lot of these educational problems everywhere. And I think we regularly are probably super thankful we learned how to multiply fractions. But, you know, imagine how different education could be in the next decade when education is democratized or customized and it's engaging to learners, right? Like, our kids today will be, you know, the leaders of humanity in the coming decades, and they need new ways of learning and educational systems and experiences. And I just feel like, you know, we kind of owe it to them.
Yeah. So that what this touches on, in my opinion, is a debate that I've had a few times on the Literacy Advocate over whether the role of education should be more focused on training kids to become specialists at things that they are interested in / good at, or whether it needs to generally prepare them for society, life, the world, etc. Like, which is the more primary focus of education? Where do you fall on that question?
I'm not copping out, but I don't know. I think a bit of it is both. Like, again, I don't think these are easy questions. What I'm pushing is I don't think we're talking about it enough, to your point, right? And I think the reality is, and the only reason I deem on both is because, you know, when you're passionate about something, you and me have a great conversation about this. We're passionate about it, right? We care about it. That's important to your learning and your development. But at the same time, you know, education's in the future is not just going to be for youth. I think as we displace large parts of the world as we know it, employment, the workforce, right? We got to think through what this means to our self-worth, you know, to our communities, our families, our identity, you know, the identity of humanity. Like, we're going to need to re-educate large parts of the population. And this change is happening now. We might not all be noticing it, but I think to answer your question, like, I think you do need to learn, but I think about something you're passionate about, but I think it's the takeaway is learning. And as long as you're able to continuously learn new things and adapt, that's going to be the most important kind of part of going forward. Because, you know, to your point, like, you can be the best accountant in the world, and, you know, 30 years from now, you know, Timmy, your kids will never have used an accountant. It'll be entirely, you know, an algorithm that works in a piece of software somewhere. So
yeah, it's the terrifying rate of innovation that makes me personally fall more on the side of everybody needs to become a specialist. But like, you need to pick like several different things that are likely to not be innovated away in the future, at least in your lifetime, or at least in a significant portion of your lifetime, that you can become specially skilled in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just open and adapting to the change, right? That one thing you're in, you can take five strengths from that. That'll make you incredibly good at the next thing coming down. Right. And it's,
yeah,
you know, I just think the days of, you know, we talk about it like it's a long time ago. A lot of us, our grandparents, possibly even our parents, they might've worked the same job their entire life. Like, same job I'm talking about, you know what I mean? Yep. And you just don't see that as much anymore. Even if you might stay at the same organization, the good organizations have done a great job at this to keep the retention. You're working many different jobs. They might not even all be, you know, they might be lateral moves. They might be new departments. You know what I mean? We've seen it in the company that I'm with right now. We've got people who have worked across three different departments in our company. I think that's awesome. And I think that's what we have to do to keep good people nowadays. And that's the, so much of what we learn, those core skills are so transferable, right? That I think just being open to adapt, to learn to that future stuff is what's needed.
Why do you think that the education system in general is very slow to change and adapt? And is there a solution to that problem?
So I do think there's a solution. And I fought with this a little bit my own, and I'm, you know, and I, part of me sometimes I can't really figure out if we're just not noticing the change or we're lazy. And I mean, today we wake up in a world where parents and kids are staring into a screen, they're staring into their phones, right? Well, those smartphones are a long way from what, you know, Europeans had when they first descended on the Americas, but we still educate children the same, through the same models and structures as we did when that happened, right? And it's, you know, instead of enabling academics with this technology, we kind of just medicate children to get them through and adhere these kind of outdated methods and increases pressures we put them on. And you know, like we said, sure, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of work to completely redesign an old system when so much rides on it, right? And I think despite the modern expectations we put on kids, you know, they're stuck learning in a system that's hundreds of years old. You know, I kind of ask myself, like, are we lazy or are the kids broken? You know,
yeah.
I don't know. I just find it's crazy. Like the past decade, I was reading a bunch of stuff on Ritalin prescriptions. You know, in the UK, it increased 850%. America has more active prescriptions of Ritalin than most small nations have populations. Globally, like 10 years ago, there was something like 2.5 billion doses of Ritalin consumed. And it's like, I don't know, we have so many incredible and very scary technologies to disrupt how we educate kids. And I don't know. I don't know if we're just, you know, not noticing it or we're just lazy or what it is, but I feel like we could be doing more.
Yeah. Personally, I feel like part of the problem is we're asking human beings to try to keep up with the pace of technology. Like just in general, that's going to be a hard problem. But then second of all, education is a government controlled system. So it's anything government related is going to be one of the slowest forms of human change. So it's not just that we're asking humans to keep up with the pace of technology. We're asking some of the slowest systems that humanity has to try to keep up with the pace of technology.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it, right? I think, and again, this is a large part of kind of what I try to get through in my book is it's not just noticing the change, right? It's what you mentioned. We're literally going to experience 100 years of technological change and disruption in the next year. You know, we don't notice, maybe we're numb to it. You know, maybe it's changing too fast, but to your point, you know, we've got these systems that, you know, are outdated and are archaic, and we've got this incredible opportunity, you know, yet we've got these political, academic, and social systems that are, you know, kind of a joke, but increased opportunity also brings elevated risk, you know, public trust in companies, governments, media, science, right, all under attack. Yet unknowingly to some, like, what's fueling this, like you mentioned, are these potent technologies, right? Quantum computing, robotics, sensors, nanotechnology, biotechnology, material sciences, networks, AR, VR, I could go forever, right? You know, AI, and they're capable of amazing things on their own, but, you know, they're exponentially impressive, but, you know, kind of scary when they start colliding and augmenting each other. And I think understanding complexity sciences and exponential technologies, we can see it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And I think the when is, you know, a lot closer than we think. And that's kind of what I try to touch on the book, right? I present a bit of a framework on how we kind of just pick up a board and kind of surf these rogue waves of the 21st century. And how do we understand and navigate this onslaught of disruption and, you know, this time we live in that is, like you mentioned, enormous uncertainty, insecurity, you know, this exponential increase in change we talk about, it's kind of terrifying unless we have a new and different way to kind of comprehend what's here today and coming tomorrow.
Yeah. If you had to spend a year as a literacy teacher, where do you think, what would you be drawn to? And in what ways would you, I guess, area would you want to work, or what would you be drawn to, and what kind of change would you be trying to cause?
Yeah, so I spoke French before I spoke English. I was a French Canadian, and so I gravitated to maths and sciences because, you know, I went through a school system that batch processed kids, and I'm not good at identifying what a subordinate clause is in a sentence today. And I wasn't back then. And so I just got out of, you know, kind of the writing in general. And it's very ironic in a way. It was a very different challenge and hard for me to kind of write and put myself out there. And I think to your point, where I would focus would really be in some of these future mega trends that we know are coming, right? And maybe it's technical rhetoric, or maybe how do we, could be the learning one I explained, or, you know, how do we learn the cognitive and behavioral manipulations for positive reasons that keep kids more engaged, that learn more, you know, like imagine waking up and you want to go play a video game, like you want to go learn. Imagine learning was like a video game. And I feel like, you know, there are all kinds of problems on how, you know, we develop these things, but that would kind of be my focus. And I think it would be just very forward looking, because I really do think, you know, leaders of today, but more important, leaders of tomorrow are, you know, I guess I'm being positive about it, but I think they're really going to solve, you know, seemingly impossible problems, you know, tomorrow with ease, you know. And I think that's the great part about technology, if you understand it and you use it properly, you know. Obviously in the wrong hands and some of the other things, there's big scary parts of it too.
Yeah. My last question for you, Eric, is a for fun question. I'm a kids book author. I believe that you can't influence the next generation without speaking to them in a medium that they love. What's a topic or idea you would make a kids book about if you could?
You know what? I'd probably keep a similar title to the adult book I made. So I paralleled it very much in surfing, and, you know, a lot of what we have to do is we've just got to do something, right? You know, the best way not to surf is just, you know, not do anything. So I think I'd make it very relatable, right? I don't know. I grew up in Canada landlocked, but like surfing just sounds awesome. I think I'd pick something like surfing, and I think I'd make it about, you know, either learning, development. I'd make it very forward, future, and positive looking. And, you know, the reason why you want to learn things is because you literally have this endless ocean of the most incredible waves you'll be able to surf for the rest of your life. And, you know, that makes you want to put the time in to be a good surfer. You don't just become a good surfer. You got to be in good shape and flexible and understand currents and tidal patterns and oceans and all that stuff. But the reason you do all that, you know, boring stuff you hate, is so that you can go have the greatest rides of your life. And I think You know, that's a really good question that I haven't thought about too much. I've never thought about writing a kid's book, but I think I totally take some kind of angle like that.
I love it. Eric, how should listeners connect with you?
They can connect with me on ericpb.me. So that's ericpb.me. And then I'm also on ericpb.me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook as well. So
love it. Thanks so much for being on my podcast.
I appreciate you having me. This is a great time. And again, I enjoy the mutual passion and stuff. So it was a great time for me.
Great.